Hello everybody, welcome and kumusta. Thank you for joining me. This is How, your occupational therapist. And welcome to OT Conversations. In this episode of OT Conversations, I would like to share with you a scenario or a situation where I had to demonstrate upper limb motor retraining to a colleague, to another member of staff. What is the background of the case? So it's an elderly person, around 70, 80 years old. The person had a procedure that was done, and as a side effect of that procedure, the person developed a stroke. And it is the blockage type. And there was a blockage on the middle cerebral artery. And that's what it is on paper. And the staff approached me saying that there was dense hemiplegia on the upper limb and there is no movement at all. And so I went in and I wanted to share with you the process and my thinking, particularly as and how I decided on the treatment approach that I would do. Okay, so I saw the person was very tired initially. She was asleep, and so I had to go back. They had to be optimized. I wanted to see what's happening. And so my session was purely restorative. That was supposed to be what it would be. I wanted to do the upper limb retraining. But before I do the upper limb retraining, I had to make sure I have to understand what's happening with the arm. So I popped in. The person was in bed in a semi-reclined position. She can express herself, but there is dysarthria. But I wanted to really understand, first and foremost, whether she understood or she understands what I'm asking of her to do. So I asked, establish the body part identification, whether she understands me. I asked her to point to her nose, point to her chin, point to her forehead. Great, that was fine. She can understand me, bang on. And then I wanted to understand whether she has right and left discrimination. So point to the right ear, left shoulder, alternating sides of body, and she was able to do that. So that's good. She can understand. Perception wise, it is not a concern as well. I was looking at the arm and there was no movement to begin with. And I'm just stepping back. I just wanted to see if she can move it. So I gave her instructions. Can you move the arm at all? Nothing. No movement. And then what I wanted to find out is if she can feel that arm. And the reason why I wanted to know that is because the arm is the feeling on any part of the body. Any movement can happen if the person can feel it. So it starts with the sensation. So I checked. How did I check? First, I checked the touch awareness, just the light touch on different parts of the arm and on the hand. And she can feel it. She can acknowledge it. So I have done some alternating tests where I touch the forearm a bit. I ask her if she can feel it, yes or no, and she can. And there are some trick questions. Sometimes I would just pretend I would, but I really am not. And she can acknowledge that I wasn't as well. So that's good. So that's that sensation was good. The next thing is I wanted to find out. So light touch was already good. And by that, it just meant that when light touch is good, it is probable that deep pressure should be intact as well. But let's, for the sake of assessment, I had to do that as well since they follow a different paths anyway. So the light touch, they follow the anterolateral part of the spinal cord, while the posterior column of the spinal column and the spinal cord are the ones responsible for proprioception and deep pressure. So I did that as well. How did I check? Finger identification. I wanted to do that, and slightly impaired on the fingers. But I wasn't too worried about the finger identification being impaired, because that's more on the finer side of things. I wanted some gross movement. So I wanted to see how can she feel the arm. And she did. So I did the big proprioceptive tests where I bent the arm, the elbow, and then I asked her if she can feel it bent or straight. And she can. So she's good in acknowledging that. And then another technique would be running through a movement of wave and line on the hand as well. And she was able to acknowledge that as well. So sensation is good, but there is no active movement. And the next thing that I did was I checked for reflexes as well. And the one thing that is quick to establish, what I find that is good to establish, would be the brachioradialis reflex. One, because it is very accessible. A brachioradialis muscle is very accessible. That's on the forearms. Just tapped it a bit and the arm bounced. So that's good. And then I tried to check the biceps tendon reflex. It's not as bouncy, but the brachioradialis is very bouncy. So that's good. That meant to me, it just meant that there is an electric current that's going through and the upper limb is behaving like it is a reflex. And based on this, now I am thinking you can utilize some of the facilitatory techniques now. The upper limb is behaving in a reflexive way, like a knee-jerk reflex. So we just need to stimulate it. So we're all good. Now I've established the things that I needed to establish. Sensation is intact. There is no motor output. The reflex is beginning. So on a Brunstrom upper limb stage, that would have been stage 1 to 2. And so from no movement at all, but now there is an emerging reflexive pattern. And for those of you who do not know Brunstrom, have a read through it. It's like a bow bath, but they're all in the same levels. They're all in the same field anyways. So I did that. So the next thing, if I want to stimulate the movement on this arm, I know that I can use some of the reflexes. I know that I can stimulate the proprioceptors of the arm. So how did I do that? Some of the techniques would have been vibratory input. I had to stimulate the Golgi tendon organs on the tendons. I have to stimulate the muscle spindle. And how do I do that? Again, proprioceptive stimulation. So tapping, vibratory input, shaking, gentle rocking, repeated contractions, repeated passive stretches on the upper limb. And I'm not doing it slow because I wanted to facilitate. I wanted to wake up that upper limb. So if you want to wake things up, you want to go and do something fast. If you're doing very slow movement on the upper limb, it's not going to wake it up. If anything, it will just maintain the joint range. And the joint on the shoulder and the arm, that's not my concern at the moment. I wasn't worried about that yet. So I did that. And when you're doing it, don't be shy. Tap it. But when you're tapping it, use the pad of your fingers when you're doing that. And what other techniques that you do, you really need to stimulate it. And you develop a skill and possibly maybe 5 to 6 inches. So really tapping, that's what you need to do. You really need to stimulate that. And after the tapping, okay, what did I do? So on the big muscle bulk, so I tapped on the biceps. I tapped on the triceps. I squeezed the deltoid muscle. I didn't even do much on the upper trapezius because the person is lying down. I squeezed on the forearm. I squeezed on the flexors of the hand and the origin of the extensors as well. So the dorsal part of the forearm and the ventral part of the forearm as well. All the tapping, shake, move, passive stretches doing that. Quick stretch is one of those things that you can utilize, because when you're doing that, you want to stimulate the tone. You want to stimulate, you want to raise that initial spasm, because spasticity and spasm, in some ways, it is one way of stimulating and waking up that upper limb. And once you get that movement and the tone is getting increased, the next thing that you need to do is you need to inhibit it afterwards. So spasticity and increased tone to a degree is okay, particularly when they're on the early days of upper limb rehab and retraining. So I did that. And the thing that I stimulated would have been the shoulder. So what I did is I passively pushed the shoulder so that it will assume a shrugging movement. So I did, and then the right arm was shrugging up. And my instruction for the person is I first glide. I let the person feel it. And then I wanted the person to push down against my hand. Push down on my hand. That's what I wanted to do. And did that multiple times. And I can feel some movement. And when the shoulders are moving and it's depressing, it just meant that the bigger muscles that are acting on the shoulders is active, is getting activated. So it's these bigger muscles first. And these are all static muscles. These muscles are the ones that are causing stability. So stability comes in first before mobility and before skill. And so a lot of that and a lot of pushing on the shoulder, and then she's depressing. And then you push it on not just on the one plane. You do it while the person's arm is flexed to 90 degrees, push it down, let the person push up. You make sure that it's on a, like an extended in a, what do you call that? Like anatomical position, just like sagittal plane. So just do that as well. And on varying degrees. My tip is to use yourself. If you can do the movement, then the person should be able to do that as well. Okay. So after that, I have then used, I passively moved the arm into flexion. So remember, the person is on semi-recline. I raised the arm up, I was lifting the arm up, and the natural tendency of the arm is to actually fall down on the bed. But what I was doing is I lifted the arm up, and if I let go, what's happening is the arm is going to fall down. So what I'm doing is I'm gently lowering it down and just letting it fall naturally with me guiding the upper limb so that it's more stable. And as it does that, I just keep on tugging the arm upwards, keeping it up and raised. And the person's strategy is to actually pull it down. That's what I was asking the person to do. And I can feel the elbow being pulled down. So that's active movement. So you do this again, over and over again. Repeated movement. All those movements on the shoulder. Start with the shoulder. You can do like adduction, horizontal adduction, over and over again against gravity or in a gravity eliminated field. So do that over and over again. And then there's movement. I can feel there's movement every time I stimulate the upper limb. And I'm just giving the person the opportunity to use the upper limb over and over again. And then after a while, after moving some of the shoulders, I went down on the elbow. And the first thing that I wanted to do is the pushing or the extension of the elbow. So how do I do this? I quickly glided the triceps muscle. So let it glide for a while by doing some passive stretches, doing some quick stretches on the triceps muscle. And then what I do is I ask the person, move against me. And move against me as I push the upper limb into a flexion, which meant I am stretching the triceps. I am giving an instruction to the patient to say to the patient to push it and don't let me bend it. And it has to be a dance. It has to be a coordinated way. And lo and behold, the person was pushing. Again, this is in response to my sensory stimulation. This is a reaction to the sensory stimulation. And by stimulating that, you are generating movement motor. That's why it's called sensory motor approaches. You tap on sensation, you stimulate the motor. So I did that multiple times. And one of the good techniques is rather than on the plane of the flexion, you try and use some form of diagonal patterns. So look this up, PNF diagonal patterns. The body just naturally moves in diagonal patterns. And at the very beginning of all of your stimulation, use this. So I was doing that, more stretches and then combining movements as well. And then I tried to stimulate the flexion of the elbow, which would have been the biceps, the brachialis. And it's the reversal of the elbow extension. Or yeah, it's just a reversal. So what I'm doing now is I would initially passively put the upper limb into flexion and then I would stretch it. And when I did the stretching, the person would then stop me from straightening it by tugging. So it's a dance, really. It's a movement, coordinated movement between the therapist and the patient themselves. And it was that. So you just do it over and over again. Now, after that, I tried to stimulate some of the grasping movement. And the first thing that you want to stimulate is the person's hook grasp. How do you do that? It's the same technique. Tap on the muscle, stimulate it, and then let it glide. And I was doing some quick stretches and then use it and move it along on the lines and in the pattern of either flexion or extension. It's hard because for this particular person, when I passively bent the fingers quickly, I was trying to do that, there was some kind of a whinging movement on the patient. And that to me meant that there is an element of pain in there. And I can feel the hands of the person and I can see the hand that there are, the joints are knobby, meaning there is a sign of arthritis. And so I can't push that beyond what is essential and what is required. But what I did is find out some other techniques on how I can do that. So what I did is I gave my forearm and positioned it in the hands of the patient and then started shaking my forearm and then me trying to pull it quickly. And that movement is something, that feeling and the twisting movement of my forearm in the patient's grasp is something that is somehow stimulating the hands. And there was some grasping movement, but I would say it's more of a 2-. It's not even full range, but I can feel a flicker of movement. So it's not consistent. So maybe trace, but it's a bit stronger than trace. So it'd be 2-. That would be the muscle grade for that. And just did the same things over and over and over again. And that's how I stimulated the upper limb of the person. That's what's been going on in my head. What are the key points in here? The key point is understand. Number one, you have to understand the state of the upper limb, the state of the sensation. The reason why I did what I did is because I understand that the sensation was intact. And so that's one. The light touch was intact. And then the understand the reflexes. That's very important because it gives you a stage. It tells you the stage of the upper limb development and the upper limb movement. And in this particular scenario, there is a beginning of reflexes and it's becoming hyper-reflexive. So based on that, the approach then would be to stimulate. What's the best way to stimulate the person? The best way to stimulate the upper limb is to stimulate the proprioceptors. Rather than the sensation, the light touch, proprioceptors are the most effective way on how you can generate some movement. So I did that and then work on the big muscles first. Go from proximal to distal. So I started working my way on the from the shoulder to the arm to the forearm to the hand. And then you utilize some natural dynamic and some movements, particularly on the movement in terms of diagonal patterns, very helpful and very useful. And after that, just combine movements. And it's not just one exercise. You need to be quick. You need to stimulate. You need to facilitate. When you're doing that, it has to be quick. Don't worry about the hand and the arms. Or don't be careless, but at the same time, if you want to generate some movement, you have to shake the arm and you don't have to worry about it. And then you have to be mindful, obviously, of pain. Like in my scenario, I looked at the hand and then the person just whinges. I can see it. Sometimes they feel movement and they sometimes sense movement as pain. But it's a different thing when it's a pain and there's arthritic pain. And it looks like a genuine arthritic pain and I can't push that one. So for that scenario, the prognosis of the upper limb, I would say it's a little bit guarded because I couldn't generate a voluntary hand opening yet. Regardless of that movement, I was able to generate some movement, but I couldn't get some of the extensors yet. And they are the first ones. There would be the tell if a person's upper limb is going to have good motor prognosis. At the moment, it's guarded until we see some more showing off. My worry is, after my care, so I've given this person a taste of what can be done by a therapist, but not all therapists have the same skill. And so the question is the sustainability of it. How do we do this? How do we generate clinicians who has skills that are reliable, skills that are basic and essential, really? They're all very foundational skills. Mind you, familiarity also contributes and has a factor in it because I've seen this over and over the years. And with that, me seeing these things for over the years, it's just given me the comfort that I understand. And it can't go beyond. There's nothing else out there that is much more magical than what I can do. The other thing would have been NMES, FES. That would have been very helpful. And I know that is better than my tapping vibratory input. Because you are directly stimulating the nerves. You're directly stimulating the myoneural junction. So I know that. And that was very impressive. There we go. That's my process, guys. That's the story. Particularly on the upper limb motor retraining. Gosh, I hope you're able to follow my description because this is like a big monologue that I'm doing. So if you learned a little something, have a conversation amongst yourselves, grow together and learn together. If you like it, let me say this. Please subscribe, share. Talk to your friends about it, really. I'm happy that there are people listening to my podcasts every day. And I really am doing this for free. And you have the free platform for this. There is no plan to have any subscriptions or anything, but all I wanted is for people to share this learning with each other, because I'm getting old and I just wanted to pass on the information to you guys. And I say things over and over again, so you can just listen to this. At least you can learn while you're driving a car or while you're walking. Okay, thank you for joining and listening. This information of OT Conversation is a relevant information involving OT, which makes it a riot conversation. Just remember, guys, anything you do matters and has an outcome. Until next time, bye.